But when I started saying yes to these opportunities that were being presented to me, that's when I started truly growing. And it's crazy because my biggest barrier my freshman year was myself. I was the one that was saying no to these opportunities that were being presented to me.
Welcome to Latinx Can, a podcast showcasing Latinx professionals who turn their dreams into realities. I'm your host, la doctora Jenire Flores Delgado, and today I'm here with Jay Flores, an engineer and global STEM ambassador who is on a mission to change the world by inspiring young minds to keep doing cool things with STEM. And he's here to tell you, si se puede, my friends, si se puede. Jay Flores, welcome to Latinx Can.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. I'm excited for our discussion today.
Yeah, me too. You are so interesting, and I can't wait for everybody to know a little bit more about your story. So why don't we start by talking about where your story begins?
Yeah, so I was the first in my family, not born on the island of Puerto Rico. So my parents met in Florida, and my dad joined the military. And that eventually led them to move around the country a few times. And then my mom had postponed her graduate studies during that process so she could be with my dad during that time. But it was always a plan of hers to go back to school. And so when he finished his military service, she then applied to graduate schools, and the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee gave her the best scholarship package. So that's how that's how I ended up. Instead of Puerto Rico or Florida or Texas, I ended up in Wisconsin. But it ended up leading to a lot of really important experiences that guided me on my STEM journey. So aside from, you know, a few times falling in the snow on my way to school and things like that on campus, it ended up being good for me in the long run for my engineering career. So I can't complain.
Yeah, and that's a long way from Puerto Rico. So I bet you guys looked forward to going back to the island every winter.
Oh, absolutely. I was born in September. And I was already on a plane in December to Puerto Rico. So at 3 months old, was already back there. We would always go back to see my grandparents and my cousins and my tías and tíos. I actually lived there for a while too when I was studying abroad. And abroad, I say in quotation marks because I am Puerto Rican. But I wanted that experience of what it's like to live and work there, not just to go there on vacation and visit family.
Right.
They have a deeper understanding of kind of the industry in Latin America and the different engineering challenges that Latin America faces. So that was a good opportunity for me to be, even though Puerto Rico is part of the United States, that particular division was considered part of the Latin America division that I was working for. And so I got to interact with people from other countries.
Your parents don't necessarily have a STEM background, but your dad acquired some of that knowledge in the military, and your parents were very adamant about letting you explore and helping you develop those skills from a very early age. Tell us a little bit more about that.
They have a cool combination that I think has really helped shape me into the type of engineer I became and now how I've shifted my career and my focus areas. My father didn't go to college, but he has a STEM training via his military background. He was a helicopter mechanic for the Apache helicopters. And my mother studied psychology. She's an elementary school psychologist. So I think that combination of problem solving and wanting to help people, especially young people, is really what has shaped my career path and the business that I'm running now. And the things that I take the most from them is my mom has so much empathy because she's seen so many different challenges that people face.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, some of the challenges that people face in the world, the people that have the solutions to those problems don't have that problem.
Yeah.
So then those resources don't get leveraged to solve those problems for those people. So from her, I've learned that, you know, it's not just about what your bubble and your world is going through. There's so many other challenges out there, and we need to design STEM education and STEM opportunities with equity in mind and understanding that Some students might not have the materials at home for, you know, to do the activity that you're going to want to share. So I'm always trying to figure out how do I reduce those barriers as much as I can. I get that from my mom. And then on my dad's side, what I love about him is even though he doesn't have an engineering degree, I think it's actually better for him because he's just a pure problem solver. He doesn't worry about how it's been done. He doesn't worry about what equation you need to use.
Yeah.
He just goes in and he analyzes things and he figures it out. And there's never been something that I've seen him like want to do and that he wasn't able to figure out, whether that was, you know, just like Googling it, I guess YouTube, watching videos.
Yeah.
He used to watch a lot back when before YouTube. There used to be some shows that were like kind of do-it-yourself shows for around the home and stuff. And he would just watch that, and the next day he'd have it built and doing really cool. And so I admire him for that. And that kind of encouraged me to explore more of the builder and the creator in them.
You mentioned that you were the first one in your family that was born outside of Puerto Rico and the first in your family to study engineering. And so given the lack of representation of Latinx people in STEM fields, now, and especially when you were a teenager, what motivated you to study engineering since you didn't have that clear example at home?
Yeah, so first, definitely, I was blessed to have the parents that guided me into saying I could be whatever I wanted. And I really felt like I believed it. I could feel like the genuine, they believed in me. And I think that makes a huge difference in the life of a child. There's going to be so many times they hear no or are discouraged or said they can't do things. So as long as you have that core from your family and you tell your children that you believe in them and that they can be what they want, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Then I had a couple of teachers that said you could be a good engineer, and that opened my eyes to what that was could be. And I didn't know about that prior to them really showcasing that. Even though my dad was doing STEM and engineering work, he didn't call himself an engineer. So I didn't really connect the dots there. But then this summer camp at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, it was called the ESP, so Engineering Summer Program. And it was geared towards minorities in STEM that were interested in potentially pursuing STEM or engineering degrees. And it was the summer of our junior year of high school. So it was a really important kind of year when you're deciding where you're going to apply and where you want to go and what you want to study. And they had several courses that were very helpful in making sure that your math was up to par, that your chemistry and other challenging subjects that are usually those weed out courses at the university in engineering, that you'd be better prepared for that. And if it wasn't for that, honestly, I don't know if I would have been able to make it through college math, because I was not, although I was good in math in high school, I was on like a lower track in the sense that I didn't do calculus in high school. I only went up to pre-calculus and I got good grades and I enjoyed it and everything, but it's just, I didn't know which classes to pick. So I chose the easy route in high school. That's what made sense to me, because I didn't have anyone else that went to school, to that particular school, to give me that guidance. But then also the most important part was actually a ropes course where we were doing. So it was like this outdoor team building activity. And we were doing these different challenges. And there was one where you were on this like giant platform that was like a teeter totter, like a seesaw.
Okay.
And we had like 15 students on it. And so it was enormous. And we had to balance it so that neither side was touching the ground. And then you had to pass a Beanie Baby from one side to the other without the seesaw, the teeter totter touching the ground again. So in that moment, I just remember like holding the Beanie Baby, like, oh, this is what engineering is, which has nothing, like on the surface has nothing to do with engineering, but it's problem solving. And you get to decide what kind of problems you want to solve. That's where it really clicked for me. It's just the name for problem solvers,
okay.
A title for problem solvers. And in that moment, we were solving the problem of moving a Beanie Baby across this silly platform with a bunch of students without it touching the ground. But, you know, in our classes, we could be solving the problem of creating an engine that doesn't pollute, or curing cancer, building a really cool building. Like, there's all these different things that you can start working on. And that's, I think, the key challenge is that we need to lead with passion and not with the equations, right? You lead, too many times you say, oh, you need to study STEM. STEM is important. It'll get you a good career. Instead of leading with, like, what are you passionate about? And then how do we find the STEM behind that? because that's what's actually going to drive someone to go down the deeper math and science. The equations don't matter. It's what you can do with those equations that matters.
Yeah, it makes it more relatable, right?
Absolutely.
And so based on that experience, you decided to study engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And as the first one in your family to follow this path, I can imagine that there were many challenges. Can you share with us how you surpassed the challenge of paying for your education and how you found your way through this new experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So my parents always also mentioned that we would figure college out. Like I could go wherever I wanted. We would figure it out. I don't know how truthful that was. I think honestly, there would have been challenges. It was more the sense they didn't want that to be the barrier that kept me from reaching my goal. They knew that we could figure it out somehow. And that's exactly what happened. It was scholarships. I actually got paid to go to college because of how many scholarships I applied for and received. And sometimes we don't think about that, or you don't want to apply because you think there's going to be so many people applying. You have to at least apply because you never know which ones. There's so many different types of scholarships out there with so many different backgrounds. I remember one that I got where the overall pool was very competitive, but there was one sponsor company that was based in the Midwest, and it was there weren't a lot of applications for them from the Midwest. So even if I wouldn't have, let's say, gotten the highest level scholarship, I got the one that was sponsored by the company from the area I was from because they were looking for students from Midwest school.
Yeah.
And so you never know what opportunities are out there. I highly encourage you to look for as many scholarships as you can and start applying as early as possible. Join student organizations that are STEM focused and have scholarships along with them too, because a lot of those organizations, you're only competing with the other students within that organization versus the entire pool. And so that made a big difference, because even though my parents would have done whatever they could to help, they had already done too much for us. I didn't want them to have any additional burden. And so I was able to cover my entire costs and actually make more because of the extra scholarship. I just kept applying, even when I had everything done, just keep applying. And that was extremely helpful. And then the other key was just finding community and organizations to support you in the areas that you aren't strong in. And so whether that's going to tutoring, in high school, I didn't need tutoring. I was a pretty good student. I didn't have any challenges to that sense. I mean, I was just saying everything was super easy, but I didn't have to go to the point of getting tutoring. Yeah. And in college at first, I thought that was like a bad thing. Like, oh, I need a tutor. That means I'm doing bad, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, especially in engineering, it's a team sport. You need help. It is something that we're trying to do things that have never been done before. Like, you need to have that mentality of it doesn't make you any less if you go out and seek help. It actually makes you a better engineer because that's how ideas evolve, and you share them with other people and they have expertise in certain areas. And that's how a small idea can turn into a large company. Yeah. And so whether that was tutoring or joining the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers and other student organizations on campus that helped me know the things that I didn't know, if that makes sense. So many things out there that you should be working on that you just don't know.
Yeah, and to your point of finding the mentoring and especially the tutoring help, which is so important, it's like I didn't get exposed to it until I was in Chem 2 and I had one of the hardest professors teaching the class. And he was older, he was in his ways, and he did not want to retire, and he did not want to use the regular books. So he wrote his own book, and that's what he was using. And so when I was a diver, they gave me access to tutors because you invest so much of your time doing the sport that you're doing in college that they tried to help you. Because also, in order to be able to compete in the NCAA, you still have to maintain at least, at the very least, I think it's a 2.8 GPA. Mm-hmm. So that seems so low for me, but I would see athletes that would not make it and they had to sit out an entire season. So the athletics department was also invested into helping you succeed academically. So I had this one tutor, and she was my tutor for chemistry, and I showed her the book that I was using, and she's like, oh, I don't understand this book. And so she's like, I don't know what this is. And so what I did then, like, I heard my classmates talk about this tutoring service that was it was a private tutoring service, so you had to pay for it and you had to go to these places. And I went only one time and I realized that it wasn't worth it because they were teaching me how to ace the exam. They were not teaching me the fundamentals that I needed to continue to be successful. But then I found the tutoring that the university offers. So like the chemistry department will have office hours with the graduate students that also are teaching assistants. So they will help you and it's free. And in, like there are many other places on campus that probably offer free tutoring mm-hmm. for students. So one of the things that I learned is that, yes, many people will pay for tutoring, but the university also has a lot of resources that you can use for free. And definitely, definitely, definitely go to office hours because it's like a free tutoring. And sometimes people don't even go to those.
Yeah, definitely. Don't, if you're, I guess, having challenges in this space, don't go through those challenges alone, whether that's free tutoring, paid tutoring, office hours, talking to the professor after class, whatever avenue or as many as you need, go out there and get that support because that's what's going to help you really navigate through the process. And when you get more comfortable with that, everything else is just going to feel much easier because now you know where to go for support.
Right.
Before, when you were just stressing out by yourself, causing yourself to get very anxious, that adds to the challenges. And so do whatever you can to reduce as many barriers for yourself as you can, because it's already pretty challenging.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned the Society of Hispanic Engineers, and they were definitely a strong influence in your career from a very early age. So tell us a little bit about what SHEP is and also how you found them and how you became involved with them.
Yeah, so SHIP, Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers, is a student and professional organization. There's chapters all across the United States and Puerto Rico. Most major universities, community colleges will have student chapters, and then either companies or city-based professional chapters. So it's a wonderful network to be a part of. There's also SHIP Junior, which is kind of at the high school level right now. I'm actually doing the science experiments for their Noche de Ciencias program. So I'm really excited for that partnership. We're going to get science into more Hispanic homes across the country virtually. And so the organization is guided towards helping empower the Hispanic community to reach its fullest potential, specifically in STEM, but in general. And so for me, they were actually part of some of my visits to campus when I was in high school. So they would have, for example, like a student panel, and oftentimes the SHIP president would be on there, a NSBE president might be on that panel, and they would talk to us about their experiences. And so I had kind of an idea of who they were when I got into campus, and I knew who the president was because he spoke to us that summer before. Mm-hmm. And I would see him at the gym or around campus, and you'd always say, "Oh, when are you going to come to a meeting? When are you going to join?" And I'm like, "Oh, like I'm too busy. I'm focused on my classes and everything." And that is true to a certain extent, but there's also so much time that you realize you sometimes spend on things that aren't as productive.
And
I was fortunate because of my scholarship that I had with Rockwell Automation. I also got an internship offer. And I did an internship the summer of my freshman year. And I had a great experience, especially as a freshman. My manager gave me really good feedback and said, "There's one thing I want you to work on, and that's getting a leadership position. You did a great job in your internship. Your GPA is good. Now make sure you go off and get a leadership opportunity. So that will make you a very well-rounded candidate." And so I went back. I was like, "All right, guys, I'm in. You've been bugging me at the gym all year. Now I'm ready to commit." And it was the best decision I ever made in my life. I took on a small committee role. It was called presentation chair. I had to go and talk to high school students about STEM. And that's literally what I do now.
Yeah. It's my career.
Talk not just to high school students, but talk to students and teachers and educators, other engineers about STEM. And so that was probably like the seed to what I am today. But it also led me to then go into regional and national conferences, where it really opened my eyes up to, one, how many other Hispanics there were out there in the country going into STEM, even though it didn't seem like there were many in my community, networking and mentors that I wouldn't have had access to normally, conferences, workshops, et cetera. And eventually I did a couple of the the regional conferences. And the best thing I did was I just started raising my hand for everything. Yes. Like, oh, we need someone to lead this. Okay. Oh, who wants to go to the national conference? We're going to help with flights. And I don't know why people were hesitant. I was like, okay, free flight. Yes. I don't know where we're going, but I'll do it. And so when I started saying yes to these opportunities that were being presented to me, that's when I started truly growing. And it's crazy because my biggest barrier my freshman year was myself. I was the one that was saying no to these opportunities that were being presented to me. And so I flipped the switch there, and that's where everything changed. I got recognized at some of the regional conferences and was eventually nominated to the National Board of Directors as a student representative. So I was the youngest national board member in SHIP history at that point. I'm not 100% sure if I still am. I'm pretty confident that I am. Yeah. But either way, they gave me this wonderful opportunity to grow, and that just kept skyrocketing and, you know, into all these different opportunities and exposure and high-level mentors that if I would have been shy at the beginning or said no to some of those opportunities, who knows, you know, where I would have ended up. But it really did change my life in many ways.
Yeah, what an achievement, right? And we talked a little bit about this earlier in our pre-interview, which is almost like the anti-imposter syndrome, in which I felt imposter syndrome in many multiple occasions, but this experience that you're mentioning is the opposite of it. Is, you know, understanding that you deserve to be there and you take on the opportunities.
Yeah, so I think that's key. One, we'll start with imposter syndrome and helping people understand that if you do feel that, or if you feel sometimes that you're faking it until you make it type of thing, those words, I don't like how they're phrased, but they're actually very normal part of engineering. Mm-hmm. Because what that means, what imposter syndrome is, what faking until you make it is that you're at the edge of your comfort zone. And that's not always the most exciting place to be, because it can be scary. But once you get okay with being in that spot and understanding that everything that you want is right at the edge of that comfort zone,
yes,
you just have to push a little bit more and a little bit more, and that's where you start finding these other opportunities that you've always been hoping for but never thought would come your way. That's because you haven't gotten close enough to that edge of that comfort zone.
Yes.
So in engineering, you're always trying to be at the cutting edge. You're always trying to innovate and create products that are going to change the world or that haven't been invented before. And that's why you feel that way. So understand that that's normal if you do feel that way. But then I almost developed that kind of, like you said, the anti-imposter syndrome. And that's because people were believing in me. And I was like, why am I doubting myself? The people that are in charge of these opportunities believe in me. Yes. Then, like, that should be enough. And the key that I had there was that you don't necessarily have to be ready for the end expectation of the role. They brought you into this opportunity, this leadership opportunity, this job opportunity, whatever it may be, because they see your potential and they want you to grow. And so just because the job description has a couple of things that you might not be an expert in, doesn't mean that you're not qualified or that you're not capable. You're going to grow into that role. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes that I've been sharing a lot lately is, it's have big dreams, you'll grow into them. And so if you have small dreams, you're not going to grow because you're stuck in this little box. If you have big dreams, you're going to continue to grow and you're going to fill up that role or that opportunity, that expectation that you were scared of before. You're going to be able to fill that, and then you can look for bigger boxes.
Absolutely. It's like
animals that live in shells and they have to get rid of their shell and find a bigger shell. Mm-hmm. Like that's the same concept for us. So surround yourself with people that support you and believe in you. And then you'll have that anti-imposter syndrome because they love you. They believe you. I had that with my parents. I had that with mentors along the way. And that's what's allowed me to go after these opportunities that on paper sounded crazy. Like I was with SHIP for only 9 months. I only had one leadership position and it wasn't even like a executive board position. Yeah. And then they launched me all the way to the second highest position you could have as a student. And then I then was elected to the highest. And if it wasn't for me being okay with taking those steps and listening to the people that believed in me,
yes,
I wouldn't have gotten there.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing example, right? And I felt that way many times. I do use fake it till you make it because that helps me get over, you know, the butterflies in my stomach when I'm doing something new. But I have an example similar to yours. It's like when I started doing diving when I was old. I was 15 years old. And when I started doing diving, the swimming pools we used to train at in my home town, they were broken for several months. And so the first 6 months of me in my diving career, I didn't touch a swimming pool because we didn't have anything to work with. We had an opportunity to travel to the capital city in Caracas, and we went and trained with another diving group. And so we're doing these new dives, and I'm doing like a 1.5 inward from the 5 meter platform. And I do a couple of them, and the coach from the other team, he tells my coach, hey, you should tell her to go to the 7 meter platform and do 2.5 inward. And I was like, I didn't hear this conversation. But then my coach called me and he said, hey, come here, go to the 7 meter platform and do 2.5 inward. And I was like, what? Are you crazy? Like, I just started doing 1.5. He's like, you can do it. Just jump. And the guy, the other coach, also said, you know, we'll have your back. We'll call it out, but you can do it. And I was like, you know, let's try it. Yeah, I'm only going to be here for a week, so let's go and see what happens. And I did it, and I landed on my head. It wasn't the prettiest of dives, but now I had another one. And if it wasn't for them telling me, go do it, you're ready, and we are your coaches, and we understand that you can do this, then I wouldn't have done it. So it's so much about, yes, you know, believing in yourself, but also believing that if somebody's telling you to jump, it's because you can probably do it.
Yeah. I love the example with the 5 and the 7, because I can picture them literally next to each other. And my guess is that the 7 is a little bit above your eyesight.
Yeah.
So it's literally something that was right there, but just out of your mental vision. Exactly. Of something that was possible for you. And the coach is going to guide you to that. And so that's why, like I said earlier, it's so important to surround yourself with people that believe in you and that care about you and want to help you grow, because they're the ones that are going to point out that one thing that's just outside of your vision, but that's possible for you. And then also they're the ones that are going to give you advice that empowers. And you need to learn to only listen to advice that empowers you. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean only listen to good advice or positive things. It could be something, it could be a criticism, but it's a constructive criticism that's going to help you if you listen to it and you grow. It's both criticism and praise, but only the ones that empower you and not the ones that are just purely someone hating or saying it because they can't do it, that they don't think you can do it. You just need to only focus on those ones that are going to help take you to the next level.
Absolutely. So then you graduated from college as a mechanical engineer and then went on to work with Rockwell Automation. And then you became a STEM ambassador for the company. So that's a huge shift from being an engineer to being a STEM ambassador. So tell us a little bit about how that role manifested for you and then what your goal was in that role.
So I started off with Rockwell as part of their global sales training program and then continued on as a technical sales engineer for, like you said, for about 3.5 years. And that role was exciting because I was in charge of a territory and I had clients of all different backgrounds. So I would go to Coca-Cola in the morning and then I would go to a power plant, a concrete plant, a dairy plant, like all these different variety of industries, and I got to really see how things are made. It was like that show, How It's Made. That was my job. I would go in, try to understand how these manufacturers are, what they're trying to accomplish, and how our automation and our products could help them do that more efficiently, safer, faster. And so that gave me a wide variety of examples that I would use with students when I was talking about engineering. And it really started opening my eyes to the idea that STEM is everywhere. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation about it's just problem solving and you get to decide what type of problems you want to solve. Now I had this like big bunch of examples of all different kinds of things. So if you're passionate about making cookies, like I've been to a Chips Ahoy plant and they were making Chips Ahoy. And imagine just, you know what it smells like when you open the oven when you're baking cookies? Imagine like the largest building you can think of filled with that smell. Like it was one of the coolest things. And I just had all these really cool experiences I was sharing with students. And so I started crafting, okay, what are the ones that are going to most resonate? How do I get that student that doesn't necessarily care about math and science right now and help them see the STEM behind the things that they care about? Mm-hmm. And that led to my first TED Talk that I gave at the TEDx Youth event in Miami. And I focused on that, on kind of STEM being everywhere around us and helping youth see the STEM behind the things that they are excited about, whether that's movies, superheroes, cartoons, just like the everyday examples that you see that are really cool and inspiring, but we don't necessarily view those as engineering. It actually started with cereal as one of the examples. And that TEDx talk eventually got viewed by one of our vice presidents at Rock Automation. And we were at the first Robotics World Championship at the time. And she's like, "You're like our STEM ambassador." And then we were both looked at each other and we're like, "That should be a thing." And so it took some time. It took about a year, but we created and pitched the role. It was a good mix of kind of the company and industry need for more students to want to pursue these careers. And then also kind of the perfect skill set that I was working on and that I was passionate about with my engineering background, my public speaking skills, my ability to connect with young people and make science exciting for them, made this kind of perfect storm. And so, yes, I did shift away from like the engineering side of working with those customers, but I did end up picking up different type of customer. One of those was with FIRST Robotics.
Talk about what the FIRST Robotics competition is, because that's an amazing event and I don't know that many people know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't been to a FIRST event, once they get back in person, you definitely need to go to one. It starts as young as 4 years old and the students are using Lego Duplo blocks. They're learning about kind of building and teamwork and creating ideas. When they're 6 years old, all the way up to around 10 years old, they start actually doing some coding with Lego. So they have to have two moving parts on their project, and they use block code to make that happen. So it's just a simple couple lines of code, but a six-year-old doing that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I don't and think I think can it's do very,
that. And I think it's very important because I think we should view coding as important as reading and writing. Mm. And if the, especially if like this is the secret for here for the Hispanic community or any community that wants to advance, is that there's not a lot of schools or communities that have it right with, when it comes to computer science education and robotics education. So if we can get this right, if a country or a community really focuses in on making sure that all of their elementary school students have the coding and kind of problem solving skills that are required, you can change completely a country or a community within the next generation, because those students are going to grow up with skill sets that most other students aren't going to have to at that same level. But then as they get older, then they move away from Lego and they start using more industrial parts. There's the FIRST Tech Challenge where they use, they program using regular programming languages and it communicates to an Android phone and they use the Xbox controller to drive the robot. And then at the highest level in FIRST Robotics competition in high school, they've got like an 150-pound robot is doing very complex things that I didn't even do in my senior design project in college. But the best part and the reason why I want everyone to go to events is the energy and the excitement around events and the passion that the students and community brings to science. It's one place where you feel like if you're a STEM student, you're a celebrity, or if you work for one of the sponsoring companies, like you're their hero. And just imagine like a basketball court, like a high school basketball court filled with parents and other students, like with the team colors and celebrating and cheering on these teams and robots. It just takes it to another level and really does what I think we need to do, which is celebrate science as a society, because society gets the best of what it celebrates. And if we're not celebrating science and math and technology, we're not going to get the best students in those areas. And that's what's going to then bring challenges when it comes to being competitive as a country. So definitely check it out. FIRSTinspires.org is the website. You can get all the information you need there. But it's a wonderful organization for students. And it's global. Pretty much all across Latin America, Asia, Europe, there's teams available. Or at least you can start a team. So there's no limit or barrier to that, to at least getting started, even if there isn't a team there already.
I love that concept of celebrating STEM like if it was a sport, right? Because it's such a great feeling for me coming out of that water and seeing that I got one of the, you know, it wasn't a perfect time, but it was a pretty good. And you like come out and people are cheering for you. It's an amazing feeling.
Like I'm getting goosebumps right now because I'm thinking back to it. I really miss it because the World Championships, for example, were in Minute Maid Park. There's two events. One was in Minute Maid Park, which is where the Houston Astros play baseball. So the year after they won the World Series, there were students on the field with robots. They were playing there to a stadium, not completely full. It's not that big yet, but very like a lot of fans in that stadium, supporting them and celebrating what they're accomplishing in science and robotics. And then the other one was in Ford Field in Detroit, which is where the Detroit Lions play for the National Football League. And so to see entire sections of students cheering on this type of success was wonderful. And then you bring all those additional aspects to STEM and you give the students a real life application of what they're doing in the classroom. It's just like the perfect storm of all these wonderful things that are required for good innovation in the future. And they're doing a really good job of preparing students.
Yeah.
And so I had the opportunity and the honor, I guess, to help select the products that are going to make those experiences possible. So every year FIRST has a new theme and they'll meet with us early in the year and we'll say, okay, this year, this is our theme. This is the type of activities we want the students' robots to be able to do. And then this is how we, you know, we plan on hopefully using automation to score the point system and things like that. So I'd have to think about which one of our products would help us do that best for them so that we could kind of continue to elevate the level of experience that they had every year. Because when they first started off, they'd have to have judges like one by one tallying scores.
Oh,
and so,
wow.
For example, you couldn't have a game that was, if you had a shooting game, you couldn't have the robot shooting too fast because there's no way the judges are going to be able to score all those items. So you'd have to slow the game down some. When I have a sensor back there, that's, you know, the balls are feeding into a little funnel and the sensor's picking each one up as it goes by. Now we can shoot, you know, rapid fire and make the game more exciting for both the students and the audience that's watching.
Mm.
And also even just having the scoring system was important being automated because that gives you a real-time score and it gives you a score right away when the match is finished. Versus if you're in the audience and you have to wonder or wait of what's going on, that takes away from the excitement. So it's not just the importance of giving a good experience for the students. We want to make STEM exciting for a viewer. And if you can do that, that's where you change the game for everyone. Because now abuela and abuelo and mom and tías and everyone wants to go see. And that makes it kind of next level experience for the students and for the parents and for sponsors and anyone else that wants to get engaged.
Yeah. And you've made it your mission now to make STEM fields interesting for kids, right? So tell us about the other different ways that you try to grab their attention and that you try to really make this feels interesting for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for new ways. Right now, my favorite is It's Not Magic, It's Science, which is a series I created during the pandemic. I started it on TikTok and it really was because I had this amazing schedule with FIRST where I was going to be traveling all over the place and had all these events and opportunities to be in front of students and inspire them, you know, thousands at a time. And then all of a sudden I had nothing because all of those events were being canceled and postponed and all that. And so I wanted to make sure that I still had that impact. And so I'm like, okay, where are students going to be no matter what happens in the world? No matter how bad COVID gets or if there's an asteroid coming, students are still going to find time to be on their phone. No matter how much Zoom fatigue they have, how sick they are of being in front of the computer all day, they're going to find a way to get to TikTok and be on their phone. And so I was like, okay, I need to get on TikTok. I need to start learning about it and be creative and figure out how I can bring science to that platform. And so at first, you know, a lot of people are like, you're crazy. Are you going to be doing like silly dances and stuff? I'm like, no, like just because that's what it started as doesn't mean that's the only type of content that's going to succeed on this platform. And if this is where the student's attention is, this is where we need to learn. And so I started the series there and it did super well. I had millions of views across the videos that I was doing for It's Not Magic, It's Science. And the key there was that I put a lot of intention into how I designed them. First, I designed them with equity in mind. So I wanted to be things that anyone can either have in their home already or that they can purchase for just a few dollars, like on Walmart or on Amazon or something. That leads to success for a couple of reasons. One, there's not a student that feels left out because they didn't have, you know, the money or the time or the materials for it, right? The majority of them will be able to do these, whether that's at home or at school. The second thing is that a lot of times, a lot of the inspirational stuff that people put out there in terms of content and science is not very accessible. And so now, it's cool that you inspired them. It's cool that you got them excited. But if they can't be a part of it, they don't take those next steps that are important to becoming an innovator and really doing the work that inspires them to take on the harder math and science to become an engineer. So I want them to actually do it, not just to view it. And then also the key was that it was magic. So magic is something that's not gender specific. It doesn't matter if you're old or young, rich or poor, what country you're from. Magic is something that can reach any audience. And the key audience that I wanted to reach using magic was the people that weren't already looking for at-home science experience. Because I knew there was going to be some parents out there that were already, you know, proactively looking for science and math stuff for their students. But I wanted to reach the ones that weren't already looking for this. And if I could reach them, I'm already going to automatically reach the ones that are looking for it. And so the first video in the series, there's always three parts. So it starts with just the experiment. So this is just the trick. It's a science experiment disguised as a magic trick. And if I didn't say, you know, my name is Jay Flores and this isn't magic, it's science, you would have thought it was just a random magic trick, but it's not. Then the second video is the explanation video. And so that's where, in most cases, you go to a magic show, you never find out how it's done and you can't do it yourself.
Right.
So that's what's cool about me being a scientist and not a magician is that I can reveal the magic, or in this case, the science behind the trick, and then you can be inspired to go do it yourself. So that explanation video is critical in getting them to want to take the next step. And also, the way I describe it is also very important. So I tried to share the science in a way that an 8-year-old and a 108-year-old could understand it, so that anyone that comes across this video can be potentially inspired by it and want to engage someone else in it. And then finally, the last video is the exploration video. And this is very important because this is where they then go on and either think of real life examples that already exist that apply that type of science, or more importantly, they try to come up with their own applications for how what they learned can solve problems in the future. And since they're so young, it can be a crazy idea. It doesn't have to be something that's really considered feasible right now. The idea is that it will be the spark that inspires them to go down that path. But then in 10, 15, 20 years, they do something that like completely blows our mind and we would have never thought was possible.
Yeah.
So that's my long-term goal, is that these will be a spark that then take a student on a much greater path towards innovation.
I love how you're thinking about this, because one of the challenges that we have as scientists in the society is the distrust, right? People don't trust scientists anymore. Well, hopefully after this pandemic, we have gained a little better reputation again. But it's our job as the people who know have the foundation to share this information. It's our job as scientists to help communicate and educate our own society. And like you're saying, if our kids are on their mobile phones all the time now, it's on us to adapt to the new circumstances. And that's what science is, right? It's about innovating. It's about changing ways in which we can do something better. And if these are the circumstances, then we have to adapt and innovate towards them.
100%. And even if, like, let's say you're listening in and you're part of a company, you're like, oh, I don't think my company is ever going to have a TikTok. That's fine. And you don't have to have a TikTok either, but you do need to understand why it's working and how it's changing how people like to be communicated with. Just understanding how they enjoy that is important. So that's how also another key thing with the videos is I kept them short and sweet and fast and to the point, so that they can get excited about it and then go watch another one and get even more excited about something else.
Yeah.
And then go take the time to then go and do it themselves, instead of taking the time listening to this really long video that has a lot of unnecessary stuff in it.
Yeah.
So that's key. And then the other key is just this other series I'm working on, which is called Changing the Game. And this was in partnership with FIRST and Rockwell Automation, because this year's theme is around sports. And so just as you said, if kids are on their mobile phones or if they're celebrating TikTok, we need to go to where they're at, where they're celebrating. Instead of competing with sports, let's like leverage sports to inspire and STEM. And so there's tons of examples of technology, of data analytics, of medical and kind of recovery advances. There's a wide variety of ways in which we can connect STEM to sports. And so if someone's hero is LeBron James, instead of saying, no, we don't need LeBron James, or it's almost impossible to become LeBron James, you should be a computer scientist. And if they've never heard of computer science before, they're not going to care. Like, they're going to think you're trying to crush their dreams. They're not going to listen to you. And all of a sudden, oh yeah, it makes so much sense. I'm going to be a computer scientist. Like, there's no way, zero chance that's going to happen.
They'd be like, mom, instead, you missed the point.
Exactly. Instead, lean in on their passion. They're telling you, I love basketball. I love LeBron James. Lean in and say, wow, did you know like the physics of like a half court shot? Or did you know how much data goes into determining who they're going to pick in the draft? Have you thought of how they create the stadiums and what kind of civil engineering examples are happening in like the new cool stadium, wherever that's being built? There's so many different ways that you can do it. And that way you're leaning into their passion and you're potentially creating a STEM career for them in that space later on in the future. Mm-hmm. Like one that I'm really excited about, and this is exciting and scary at the same time, depending on how drones are going to be used in the future. Mm. But an exciting application of drones, I think, is like really cool close-up shots of the action in sports. Mm. So imagine someone shooting a half-court shot or throwing a Hail Mary pass or you diving off the diving board and the drone is like right there next to you, giving you angles that you could never have appreciated before, right? Or allowing for multiple angles and just – really immersing you in the game. And so, you know, that's going to be technology and STEM professionals that create those type of experiences and possibilities. And so that, I think that that's just one small example of the many different ways that technology can continue to influence sports. And we can think about that in movies and other things that students are celebrating. So if your child wants to be a YouTuber, talk to them about careers at YouTube. Don't just say, oh, YouTube isn't a career. Or give them ideas of careers that will help them build their YouTube channel. So, for example, like search engine optimization, marketing, graphic design, like these different things that could actually be career paths for them that will also help them on their YouTube channel. So don't shut down their dream. Mm. Like help them build skills that will not only help them with their YouTube passion right now, but then could also help them in other careers in the future if YouTube doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, that's excellent advice for parents who are faced with those comments from their kids now, right? Like I have my nephew said that to us maybe 5 years ago. He said he wanted to be a YouTuber or an influencer. And we're like, And we did not celebrate that. We shut it down. So we missed out an opportunity to really try to reframe the, you know, the excitement and the passion for that.
And it's important that we're having this conversation too, because for example, there's not, especially in communities that don't have the same level of engineering experience in their family, they're not going to know what search engine optimization is. Yeah. Right? And so whenever I'm talking to parents, I want them to understand the wide variety of options there are out there for their students. And YouTuber right now is the number one career path for students. Like YouTuber slash influencer is the number one thing. I know when I was growing up, I think it was like athlete and pop star were like usually the top ones that kids wanted to be. Right now it's YouTuber, influencer. Astronaut is usually always kind of high up there. Athletes are always high up there, but it's changing a little, right? Especially with the influence or with the expansion of YouTube and influencer opportunities. Mm-hmm. So we need to dig into that. And so I there's a good example with my little cousin. And this, he like melted my heart with this because he asked me if he could tell me what he wanted to be. He was like 8 years old and he gave me three. He's like, I got three options. Okay. The first one was a video game designer. And so initially I kind of just dismissed that one. But what I should have done was talk to him about computer science and programming and coding. Yeah. Right? Cause that's so important to pursue that. And so even if he didn't go on to pursue one, video game design is an actual career. So if your kids are telling you that, like you can definitely encourage them to do that. Mm-hmm. It's a really good career. Two, it's even if they don't become a video game designer, they're going to, if they build those coding skill sets, they're going to be very valuable to any STEM or manufacturing company. So they're going to have tons of opportunities available to them. So I wish I would have encouraged that one more, but fortunately the second one was he wanted to be a mechanical engineer at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So he like melted my heart there. He ended up studying, he's studying now mechanical engineering, but at University of Puerto Rico in Mayagüez. So he didn't pick Madison, but that's actually, I think, a good thing. And then the third was a baseball player, and Wisconsin didn't even have a baseball team. So we kind of dismissed that one. But again, I wish I would have thought of what I'm doing now with changing the game and said, oh yeah, you know, there's tons of data analytics and statistics that go into baseball. watch the movie Moneyball, where they talk about how they made like almost a championship team using like analytics and picking players based on number, or like certain numbers and how they work together versus just who had the most home runs or whatever. So there's so many different ways to connect what our kids are telling us they're passionate about to science, and just lean into that. Try to find STEM examples, no matter how crazy their idea is. I wanted to be a crossing guard when I was a kid. That was one of my first ideas of what I wanted to be. And again, fortunately, my parents didn't shut that down. They're like, okay, you got to be the best crossing guard. You got to make sure the kids are safe and good. So you never know where that initial, what seems to be a silly idea, can turn to if you start showing them the math and science behind their initial idea or their initial thing that they're excited about. So never shut any of those ideas down. Just guide them more towards the science behind those ideas.
And if parents need to find those connections, they can definitely go to your YouTube channel and your TikTok channel and Instagram, and all of that information is going to be there for them to find that inspiration.
Absolutely. I'm always trying to find more and more examples, because you never know which one is going to inspire that particular child. Right? I might be in an audience with 1,000 students, and a few of them will be excited about the sports example. A few of them will be excited about curing cancer. And some might be excited to hear that, like, when I was at Rock Automation, we could make over 1,000 diapers in 1 minute. Like, one is funny to some students for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. I mean, I never thought of making diapers before, but that could be cool, you know?
Yeah, it's so powerful when children can relate to what you're doing. I was in the Bronx a couple of years ago with a company I worked for. We went to do an outreach activity, and the Bronx is majority Black and Latino. And so I wasn't so excited to join, but I finally got a little nudge from my coworker, and I was like, okay, I'll show up. So I went, and the first person who started to introduce themselves from the team that we were in, she said, oh, hi, I'm Dr. Bridget. And I'm just so used to being a doctor and working with so many other PhDs that we don't use our titles. Mm. So when she then passed on to me the microphone, I was like, wait, what? Do I have to introduce myself as Dr. Jenny? And they're like, yes. And so I was like, okay, hi, I'm Dr. Jenny. And how many of you brush your teeth every morning? And all of the kids were like, me, I do it. And I did that just to connect them to what I was doing, which I was working in the product development lab for toothpaste and mouthwashes. Okay. And so I said that, and they're like, yes, I'm going to brush my teeth every day now. And so, you know, getting that excitement from them, they all of them were super excited right there with something so simple. But then the other thing that I got from my coworkers afterwards, she's like, the moment that you said you are Dr. Jenny, some of those little Latina girls who were in the audience, their eyes illuminated because they had never seen somebody like that. And so I was like, wow, you know, that is such a difference that we make just by creating those connections and creating those examples.
It's so important, because like we said earlier, sometimes if you can't see it, you can't be it. And hopefully some of those students that don't have those examples in their families will still persevere and look to other people for role models. And now it's even better with YouTube and other things, because now you can search for role models, even if you don't have them in your community. You can even learn from people that died because their videos are still on YouTube. But that also shares another thing in the sense that the Hispanic community is very known for like the familia aspect, but also for being humble.
Yes.
And just doing your work and just staying humilde. And that's a great trait, but we also need to be humble but loud.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is that we need to be visible to the students in our community. And it doesn't mean that you're going to go out there and brag and be like, oh, I have a PhD, I'm super smart, blah, blah, blah. No. What you're doing is just that you're putting it out there, what you work on, what you've accomplished, and you're doing it with the intention of helping other people see that they can do that too.
Yeah.
And that's one challenge that I think we face, is because sometimes we're too focused in just hard work and staying humble. We need to still be visible to our future generation of innovators so that they can dream and achieve those things as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I agree with you. And we have to celebrate the progress that we've made and the successes that we've made. I mean, with this podcast, I have found so many other Latinx professionals that if I had just stayed working at my first job, I would have never seen. But I know that we are out there because they're my friends, you know? And so I know that we just need to make ourselves more accessible for people who don't have us right next to each other.
And like they said about being surrounded by doctors all the time, sometimes when you've reached success and you start to forget about how challenging it was when you were a child and the struggles that your family went through or the things that you didn't know. Like, I used to think that the University of Wisconsin was only for doctors because my mom said something about how they had a good medical school. So if it wasn't for like the outreach programs and teachers telling me that I could be an engineer and these different camps, like I would have never thought of Wisconsin because I thought of it as only if you wanted to go to become a doctor. There's so many careers out there that we just don't think about.
And one more career then is that of being an entrepreneur and one that you're following now with your own business. So tell us about how you decide to grow your own business and what your goal is.
So I had the wonderful opportunity to start developing these skill sets while I was at Rockwell and sharing, you know, with the community, the passion that I had for STEM, influencing organizations and students and helping make it accessible and more celebrated. And I got to a point where I was having, you know, these wonderful opportunities and I was getting more recognized by other organizations that had similar challenges to what Rockwell was facing and that want to do good in the community when it comes to STEM, especially in underrepresented communities, or that often have a challenge with recruiting. Like, it depends on what part of the pipeline we're talking about, but that every company out there is facing a STEM talent challenge at some point. And for me, it really is important that we start young, mm-hmm. because that's what's going to do the needle moving work. Mm-hmm. If we're all focused on the students that are already in college or even high school, sometimes is a little bit too late. Not that we shouldn't focus on high school students, but a lot of times they've already decided what kind of career path they want to go into. And so we need to start early and make sure that the students have the skill sets that they need. And I started it in the middle, like in January. So during pandemic time, it doesn't sound like a good time to start a business, to go off on your own, to, you know, not have that security blanket of a job. But it ended up being the perfect opportunity and the perfect time because it allowed me to have the flexibility to work on a wide variety of projects with different organizations. And I've started partnering with other organizations and we're bringing educational, but also very entertaining STEM content to families across the country and across the world. One of the key things that I'm proud of my content right now versus any other kind of STEM content or keynotes that are out there is that it's a performance and not a presentation. Mm-hmm. I realize that students are so sick of listening to Zoom meetings. I do my keynotes in my kitchen, not in like front of a fancy background or anything. It's in my kitchen because this is where I do my experiments. This is where I get my house dirty. And this is how like you can do it in your house. And so just really being able to understand that target audience, what they need, what they're excited about, how they like to be communicated with, and then building the right partnerships with different organizations to make that happen and bring those resources into their homes is what I've been able to have a lot of success with in these first couple months. Overall, my mission is literally to change the world and to do that by inspiring young minds to keep doing cool things with STEM. And the reason I say keep, it's a key word in my mission statement, is because I feel that young people are already curious about STEM. Most companies and organizations are putting all their time, money, energy, and effort into trying to get students excited about STEM because mm-hmm. they're focused on that high school and college level where students have said, I don't like science anymore, or I'm not a math person. Instead, we should be focusing a little bit younger and keeping them excited about STEM. There's key age groups, especially in girls, where that kind of drops off. And if we're not putting good content out there, if we're not sharing our brands and what we do with younger students, although it takes longer to get that return on investment, it's going to move the needle way more than any work that you're doing at the higher ages. And so that's critical to me, but also understanding that there's an ecosystem around that child. So parents, teachers, other engineers. Engineers are really, really good at making really, really cool things sound really, really boring. And so I work with organizations to help them reach students in the right ways, in those exciting ways, and parents helping them do things that encourage their students to go down these paths and help them stop doing certain things that might be without their knowledge preventing their child from becoming innovative in the future.
And so tell us a little bit about where we can find you online and how can parents and children find inspiration from you.
So the easiest thing is to go to my website, which is jflorezinspires.com. And then if you scroll down to the bottom, there's the links to all of my social media platforms. So it's jflorezinspires.com and J-A-Y for J Flores with the S. Mm-hmm. My Instagram and TikTok are jflorezinspires. My Twitter is jflores2032. You can also look me up on LinkedIn under my name, Jay Flores, and then on YouTube as well. My YouTube channel is just my name. Or you can look up It's Not Magic, It's Science, and you'll find a lot of the different videos, the playlists out there right now. There's a wide variety of examples that I hope your children will be excited by. And if there's something you don't see there, shoot me a message on Instagram or whichever platform you connect with me on. And we'll see what we can do in those spaces. And if you want to collaborate, if you're someone that's representing a company or a corporation or an organization, a nonprofit, et cetera, on my website, there's a contact form that sends you directly to my personal business email. And we can connect and see what kind of opportunities might work out there, too.
Yes, absolutely. Jay, thank you so much for joining us in the podcast today.
Thank you. I had a great time and I look forward to staying connected with everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. And if you want to put a face to the voices you just heard, you can follow us on Instagram at LatinxCan. If you have questions or feedback for us, you can email us at latinxcan@gmail.com. And if you like this episode, please leave a review. It is the quickest way to grow as a community. Once again, thank you for listening. And remember, unidos somos más.